A COVID modeller says the COVID booster program should be rolled out as soon as possible in the face of Omicron reaching our shores, saying without it, we could see tens of thousands of cases a day. Cabinet ministers are to meet today to consider whether the Pfizer booster program should be urgently brought forward. A number of countries around the world have done so, and there are calls for New Zealand to follow suit. Earlier on Morning Report, the Director General of Health, Dr. Ashley Bloomfield, was asked what he would be advising Cabinet today in terms of bringing the booster program forward.
There are two considerations, really, big considerations. The first is, what's the emerging evidence around Omicron? And as I say, it seems that three doses is needed, is what's needed for good protection against Omicron with the Pfizer vaccine. But the second is sort of an operational one, and that is we want to be going into winter next year with the highest possible level of population immunity. And so far in rolling out our booster program, we've seen at that six-month interval, about half of people are booking in and having it at 6 months. And it may well be we need a shorter interval that makes sure people do get it on time. And so once we, as we head into winter next year, we've got that high level of everyone having had the three doses, and that's what we, that would be another really good position to be in.
Well, COVID modeller Professor Michael Plank from the University of Canterbury has carried out initial modelling on what the arrival of the Omicron variant, currently, as far as we know, confined to the border, but what its arrival might mean.
It's early days still with this, with the Omicron variant, in terms of understanding, you know, some of its key properties. So a group in London put together a study where they estimated how effective the vaccines are likely to be based on some data on how it reacts in the lab and the antibodies effect on the Omicron variant. So it's using some estimates of vaccine effectiveness based on those groups' estimates. It's also sort of consistent with some of the data we're seeing coming out of South Africa and from the UK Public Health Agency as well. So overall, it looks like there's going to be a decrease in the effectiveness of the vaccines. The vaccines still work, still provide some benefit, but it looks like the effectiveness of two doses of the Pfizer vaccine is going to be lower for the Omicron variant than for Delta.
Lower in what way? Lower in preventing, lower in catching it, lower in preventing spread of it?
A bit of both, primarily lower in catching it. That's where we expect the vaccines to take the biggest hit. However, it is also likely that there will be some decrease in the effectiveness against severe illness and hospitalisation. That is consistent with a study that's been done in South Africa. The vaccine still provides good levels of protection, but just not as high as against the Delta variant. And when you scale that up to the sorts of numbers of people that are involved, it can have a significant impact.
So when we're talking about effectiveness, two doses versus three doses of the Pfizer, which would be the booster dose, right? What does it do to those numbers?
Yeah, so if you look at the vaccine effectiveness against hospitalisation, one of the scenarios that the London group looked at was where the vaccine effectiveness for hospitalisation was 84% after two doses, but was up to 97% with the third dose with that booster.
What does it mean for the impact of its arrival in the community here? Again, there are some assumptions, but tell us what we might be heading for in terms of case numbers.
Yeah, I mean, it's any sort of model is going to give you extremely ballpark numbers at this stage. But we can see from what's happening in countries around the world that Omicron can spread incredibly quickly. And so, in a matter of weeks, you could be looking at really very high numbers of cases, thousands, even potentially over 10,000 cases per day. And it's early days. We don't really know yet what the severity of Omicron is, what the risk of hospitalization would be. But with those sorts of numbers, it can potentially put large numbers of people in hospital and have a significant impact on our healthcare systems.
So let's look at the two models you've done based on whether or not the boosters have been delivered to the population. At the moment, there's a six-month wait before you become eligible for your booster. There is Britain is going hell for leather at the moment, trying to get its boosters rolled out quicker. Several countries have reduced that gap in order to try and combat Omicron. What does it look like, your modelling, depending on whether or not those boosters have been delivered?
Yeah, that's right. So it looks like the booster is going to be essential. Even if Omicron turns out to be significantly milder than Delta, we don't know that yet, but it's possible. But even if that is the case, just the sheer number of people involved means that you're going to be looking at large numbers of hospitalizations if you don't have that booster rolled out. Now, if you can get a significant proportion of your population boosted, ideally majority of the population with the booster dose, that significantly reduces the number of hospitalizations. So it would take us from a situation where, you know, we'd be looking at hospitals being overwhelmed within a matter of weeks unless we acted, to a situation where, you know, there would be far fewer hospital admissions and possibly, you know, something that we could manage in the community with the sorts of tools and measures that we have at the moment.
Look, again, with the caveat of trying to do modelling this early and with this many variables, it is stark to see the numbers you've uncovered. Even in an optimistic outbreak scenario here, the peak of about 50,000 cases a day if no one has had a third dose, well, we know a small number of people have, but a small proportion so far, a peak of about 30,000 cases if we get boosters out to everyone over 45 who's already had their first dose, and a peak of just under 2,000 cases a day if 93% of the population has a third jab. Eligible population, by the way, that doesn't include children?
That's right, yeah, that's the eligible population.
And so if everyone who's currently eligible had their booster, we'd be down to still 2,000 cases a day. They are stark figures. Do they paint a compelling case to bring that booster program forward before Omicron gets out in the community?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I mean, with these numbers, again, I really want to emphasize these are extremely ballpark numbers. We know the world is more complicated than a model, and we know that the government would be forced to respond. So, you know, I don't want people to look at these numbers and go, well, you know, that's just crazy.
This suggests no lockdown. Is this what you're saying again? This suggests we haven't locked down, etc. Okay.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, I think what this modelling shows is two things. One is that, you know, Omicron is a serious threat. Even if it is milder than Delta, it's potentially a more serious threat at the population level. And the second thing is that boosters are crucial. And so, yes, absolutely. I think we need an enormous push on boosters. I think we need to get boosters out to everyone as soon as they're eligible and to have a really big push on this. You know, the same way that we've had a push on our first two doses, and we've put a lot of effort into that, we now need to start putting that same amount of effort into the booster program. You know, if we can get everyone who's eligible boosted, you know, it looks a lot more manageable in terms of the demand on healthcare systems.
We're only using your optimistic scenario, not the other one. But what would happen, say if people over 45 got their boosters done before we had a significant outbreak, but before we got into that, you know, situation where it's running rampant, what would those numbers, a peak of 30,000 cases a day, mean for hospitalisation and deaths? Again, I guess you're using the existing Delta assumptions, and it may be, you know, a lesser impact with this new variant, we don't know. But what will it mean for hospitalisations?
It would be significant, and you'd probably be looking at hundreds of people needing hospital admission per day.
As many as 500, I think, in the modelling, again, with all the provisos, as many as 500. And you do note that if there were a reduction in severity in this new variant, and we're waiting to confirm that, then those numbers might come down, right?
They might come down, that's absolutely right, but it's still likely to be significant and still possibly likely to be something that, you know, our healthcare system just couldn't cope with. Even if it was at the level of, you know, 200 hospital admissions per day, that would be massive. So I think what this shows is that, again, the government would be forced to react. It's possible we'd have to use lockdowns, which is not what anyone wants. So this, again, is an argument that we need to get everyone boosted as quickly as possible.
Listening to the Director General of Health this morning on Morning Report, he was talking about needing to manage winter and that you wanted people going into winter with the optimal immunisation, which means boosters in time for winter. He also pointed out that at the moment, only about 50% of those who've become eligible for their booster, because 6 months has passed, have got them so far. Is it going to be sufficient to focus on having these boosters done by winter? Or how close or how small is the window to get those numbers up to prevent an out-of-control outbreak?
Well, I mean, the short answer is no. I don't think we can afford to wait for winter. I mean, if we had just been looking at Delta, then I think that would be a reasonable strategy. You know, we can see that countries in the Northern Hemisphere have been facing a resurgence of Delta going into winter, and it's likely that the same sort of thing would happen here. But Omicron really changes the game a little bit on that, because we've seen countries in Europe have gone from their first detected case in a matter of less than 3 weeks to tens of thousands of cases. And a situation where they're really struggling to keep up. So, you know, we can't really afford to wait for winter. If Omicron manages to get into the community here, and we hope it doesn't, but there's a risk that it will, then it could really take off and, you know, in a space of a few weeks could be causing real problems.
What should be announced out of that cabinet meeting today based on what you've just been telling us?
Well, I mean, I'm not an expert on the sort of vaccinology and gaps between doses. So obviously they'll need to take advice from the technical advisory group on that as to what the gap should be. Obviously, other countries have shortened the gap. So, you know, it's likely that they will say that is possible. And if that's the case, then certainly I think that the cabinet should take that advice and that will enable us to get more people boosted sooner.
I understand what you're saying about the vaccinologists advising on the necessary gap, but if you're looking at it purely from the point of numbers, how quickly do you want to see that booster delivered to at least the over 45s?
As soon as possible. You know, Omicron, we had our first case in MIQ yesterday. We don't know how long we've got. You know, it may be that it doesn't arrive for a few more weeks. But it could be here tomorrow, or it could even be in our community already. So really, the clock is ticking. It's going to take time to get boosters out to people. So, you know, whatever the gap is determined to be safe and effective from a technical point of view, you know, I think we should to make it as short as possible.
That is Professor Michael Plank of the University of Canterbury, who's done some initial modelling on this Omicron variant's impacts. With this, he's made clear so many times, plenty of assumptions at this stage. 21 minutes past 9, it is on 9 to noon. Well, with more on how to calibrate this decision on the timing of the boosters, we do look at the other side of this. Dr. Fran Priddy of the Milligan Institute is the clinical director of the research group Vaccine Alliance Aotearoa. Fran, thanks very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Good morning.
As things stand now, what is it that informs the timing between vaccinations and, in this case, the booster? There is an element of what? Letting the vaccine do its work before you come in with another, yeah?
Well, in the case of this vaccination program, the timing is really based on the data we saw in vaccinated populations in terms of disease rates. So looking at, you know, the countries we're watching closely to see how disease rates changed after people received two doses. And it was around the 5 to 6 month mark that in some countries they noticed an increased infection rate and also an increased rate of hospitalizations in older populations. So that's what initially informed the use of the 6 month schedule for boosters. Typically, what you do with the vaccine series, and many of the vaccine series we use are three doses total, is you space out the first two doses by a month or even more. And that gives the two different arms, the two main arms of the immune system, time to develop a more complex immune response. And then you come in several months later, often at month six. So a typical vaccine series would be first dose, then second dose a month later, then the next dose 5 months later, the third dose 5 months later. And that last dose basically takes those complex immune responses and further refines them and focuses them against the particular bacteria or virus that you're trying to protect, and raises the immune response levels up to a level that ideally will remain high for many, many years. So that's a kind of classic vaccinology.
What's happening here, though, is the new variant is mucking with the plan, because the efficacy of the first two shots that we were getting for Delta, it appears, and I'm interested in your take on this, please, to be significantly reduced against this new strain. However, what we're also hearing, and your comment, please, is that the booster brings the protection back up, not quite as high, but more significantly nearer the protection we'd planned to have. How does that change the plan for the vaccination rollout?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the situation we're in now, we're in a pandemic situation, so we're focused on getting our protection levels high enough right away to confront the COVID-19 pandemic. In this case, Omicron. Usually we wouldn't be in such a rush, and we usually space things out to give the immune system time to develop a very complex response. I think one thing that's important with the data we've been talking about here is just partial information. The lab studies that we have on Omicron so far are looking at antibody responses, and those are very important because antibody responses are probably what protects you from getting infected. So they're able to block infection, and they do also help protect you in some ways from disease, but the other parts of the immune system are equally or maybe more important in protecting you from disease, the cellular arm of the immune system. And so the data that we see here saying, yes, your antibodies drop off after two doses of Pfizer around 5 to 6 months. However, with Delta, the protection against disease in younger and healthy populations was still very good after two doses, even at 6 months. And it was really in the elderly, older adults, and other certain populations where you were seeing increased risk of disease. So even with Omicron, it's possible that cellular immune response that we got from our two doses will give us some protection against disease from Omicron. But the thing is, we just probably don't have the time to wait and find that out.
This is the T cells, is it?
So the cellular T cell response may very well still give us some good level of protection against disease. I mean, some evidence of that is the data from South Africa that was commented on by Professor Planck, where most people there have only had two doses, or only a small proportion of their population has been vaccinated at all. But of those that have had, they don't have much boosters yet. So people who received two doses of Pfizer there, for example, their rate of hospitalization, they were protected from hospitalization with Omicron. So they had about 70% protection. That's reduced because with Delta, they had more like 90% protection from severe disease and hospitalization. So it's gone down to about 70%. And this is a small number of people in one country, but it's showing that even two doses can give you some protection probably from Omicron. I think that the key here is the timing and the numbers. Omicron is so infectious. We could have a very large number of people infected. And so therefore the risk of having a significant number of cases of disease is higher.
This was Professor Planck's point, that even if you less serious illness, even if that's shown, if you've got thousands of cases a day, you are on a population basis and never going to end up with pressure on those hospitals. Do you have a sense from what you've seen so far on what would work in speeding up the booster program. Now, bearing in mind that we had a real, for a start, is there a minimum gap there ought to be to not undermine effectiveness of the boosters? Most, if I can recall correctly, there was a big vaccination drive around August, September into October. We saw very significant numbers there. So most of those people should be second dosed by December or January, right? Is there a minimum time that Cabinet should wait for rolling out the boosters more widely? What's your sense of what it should do?
Well, I think that this is not an emergency that has to be decided today. This is a critical issue that needs to be addressed, but I do think there's some time to consider the data, et cetera. So this is not something that we have a little bit of time, but my initial sense is that group three that started vaccinations, I believe, around July and August, and that's the people over 70, over 65, who weren't in the prior groups of frontline healthcare workers or older Maori and Pacifica border workers, et cetera. So people, and also people with underlying health conditions, those were all in group three. That's a very large chunk of people, over a million people. That group is probably, many of them in that group are, at 4 or 5 months after their second dose now, maybe 4 months after their second dose. So there's an older group. We know that their antibody levels will be starting to decline, or they do decline around 5 months. And that's a group that's at risk for severe illness if they get infected with COVID. So I think that's a group you consider moving up the booster dose, and you wouldn't have to move it up too much because we really don't know if there's a minimum gap. What we're doing right now is we're hoping to increase it with a booster. If we did shorten the time period, we'd be raising people's antibody levels to a level that hopefully would increase their protection against infection and disease. But it could be that then later on, if the third dose, if this is not classic vaccinology, if the third dose doesn't keep the antibody levels high for a prolonged period of time, meaning, your protection, not just from antibodies, but your whole immune system should last for years after three doses of a vaccine. If that's not the case, if we see again waning and new variants come along and they can evade the antibodies again, we'll be basically reducing the amount of time we keep people protected. So if we shorten it up now and the vaccine protection is not prolonged after a third dose, then 6 to 9 months later, we'll be back in the same situation. It's not to say we shouldn't shorten it up now. Those are just the trade-offs we have to consider.
The trade-offs, and also that the idea of an annual boost is going to come back into the conversation as well, isn't it? Let me correct myself. We had that big surge of vaccinations with the outbreak of Delta, August, September, very high, into October. I think it was October we had the Vax-a-thon. Put the 3 weeks for the second dose, and for many of these, we're looking at February, March, April as being a time that a significant number of people will be getting to or around that 6 months. Now, we're in mid getting to late December. Is it sensible to shorten the time for that large group on the basis that if a Delta outbreak starts in December, starts in January, starts in February, we know how quickly it grows? Does it make sense to shorten for that large bulk as well as group three? And if so, by how much?
It's definitely very important to consider that, because there was a very large bulk of people that got vaccinated during that period. I think it's important to look by risk group. And because even in that group, there will be people at risk that could have gotten vaccinated during the group three period, and that didn't get vaccinated early. They waited until that later time point, or they couldn't access till that later time point. So I think it's important to consider shortening the interval by age group, but I would be concerned about having a very short interval, for example, 1 or 2 months. There's really not a lot of information that people's antibody levels have waned so much by that time that giving a boost would really make a difference. So I think that's important. I think, you know, to me, four months, probably not that different than 6 months. 4 to 6 months, you know, you can probably shorten it up to 4 months. Shorter than that, I think I would only push for that in the younger, healthy people with no other comorbidities. If we had some information coming out that the booster really does a good job in preventing infection. You know, the data we've seen so far is that giving a booster prevents, it looks like it can help prevent disease, probably helps block infection, but we just don't have much data on that yet. And the reason I say that is that there's two benefits to vaccinating and giving boosters. One is, you know, the individual benefit to prevent disease. The other one is trying to reduce transmission by blocking infection. And we just don't have that much information on how well the current vaccination regimens block infection with Omicron because it's so infectious.
It's not looking so not good, sure, however population. You look at this, is it, Fran? It's not looking good, to be quite blunt, to avoid some of those interventions we really don't want to think about. If an outbreak were to seed in the first quarter of next year.
I think we need to keep our focus on preventing severe disease and hospitalizations. And we do know a fair amount about that. We know what groups are at highest risk. We know in New Zealand what the rate of people that are not vaccinated in certain communities. So we have quite a bit of information there. And also the public health measures beyond vaccination are important to consider. The thing about vaccination is it's been a real success story in general, but we see clearly multiple times now, it's not the full solution
here. Can I ask you one question just to finish? Were there to be a logistics and or supply issue, would you now advise considering rethinking the rollout to children if it were to impact on the rollout of boosters? Does one make more sense overall to fighting this pandemic than another?
Yeah, absolutely. If there was a capacity problem, then we should prioritize the booster campaign for adults, and particularly the at-risk adults. The only reason we would want to keep children on equal priority is if the capacity is excellent and we have no problems doing both, or if there is some data that emerges, which I think is unlikely, that a full regimen, full dosing in children really reduces transmission significantly and would have a huge impact on herd immunity. And with Omicron, it seems very unlikely that that would be the case. So I think we could definitely prioritize boosters if capacity is an issue.
I appreciate your time. Dr. Fran Priddy is the Clinical Director of the Research Group Vaccine Alliance Aotearoa. She's with the Maligan Institute.